Right.
Okay, Vice Chair Clark, if you want to go ahead and call the meeting to order, from there we'll go to the roll call, which I'll read. Following that, there is a lengthy welcome on here, which without the script, I don't think there's any way you'll be able to know what to say here. So I'm fine with go ahead and reading that as well, if you don't have that available.
Well, if you want to just shoot that over to me in email really quick, I have all that open. I
Oh, okay.
fairly quickly. But while we're doing the roll call, that'll be fine. So just want to welcome everybody to our Parks and Recreation Advisory Board meeting today, Tuesday, October 20th. So go ahead and start with the roll call.
Member Cachuerta?
Here.
Member or Vice Chair Clark?
Present.
Member Coyle?
Here.
Member Odell? Member Saleta?
Here.
Member Wood?
Present.
And Chair Temple? All right, and Vice Chair Clark, if you want to give me your email address, I will send that over to you right now.
Let's see. Well,
you can send through chat specifically to him.
It looks like the chat has been disabled. Uh-oh.
It's true.
Marianne, can you send, do you have Anna, Vice Chair Clark's email address?
I suppose I don't mind. There's not that many people, but there is a recording. So,
or Anna, why don't you send Matt an email?
How about we just clear this up and let Matt say the instructions?
Okay.
And we didn't anticipate this, and that's just fine. Let Matt give the instructions today.
Okay. Welcome. I'd like to thank everyone for taking the time to join us this evening. This meeting is taking place online to comply with the ongoing social distancing requirements and ensure the community's ability to participate. In order to participate, one must be logged into Zoom directly by computer or telephone. Please note that a password is now required for those who are joining the meeting via telephone. For those who are unfamiliar with the Zoom software, I'd like to provide a quick overview on how to participate. Everyone's microphone, except for the individual that has the floor, will be muted throughout the meeting to ensure as smooth and efficient meeting as possible. Only select staff can turn on your microphone at the appropriate time if you'd like to ask a question or provide comments. I will do my best to let everyone know when it is appropriate to raise your hand for a particular agenda item. If you wish to address the board on any agenda item or during the call to the audience, please raise your hand only when I announce and it's appropriate to do so. There are two ways to do this. For those participating in any platform other than by phone, find and select the participants icon. This will open a dialog box that lists all participants in the meeting. Scroll down until you find your name and select your name. Once your name is selected, a second box will pop up where you have the option to raise your hand. For those participating via phone, press *9 to raise your hand. Please wait to raise your hand until the appropriate agenda item has been announced, and after I enter the opportunity to do so. Otherwise, we will not be able to discern which topic that you wish to address in relation to the agenda. Our aim is to proceed in a timely and efficient manner. Once your hand is raised, I will be alerted to your request to speak. So please raise your hand if you have a question or comment after I announce the appropriate time to do so. At the appropriate time, I will call on those with their hands raised to provide questions or comments. I will then announce your name and staff will unmute your access so you can speak. Please make sure you are not also muted on your personal device. Please review the meeting agenda so you know the item on which you'd like to speak. Please don't raise your hand until we have made it to that item on the agenda. As with all Town of Oro Valley public meetings, please clearly state your name and whether or not you are an Oro Valley resident. Also, speakers are limited to no more than 3 minutes. A timer will be used with in-person meetings, and we ask that you please respect the 3-minute limit.
Okay, so we're going to move into the called audience. Right? And just, okay. So just call audience. At this time, any member of the public is allowed to address the commission on any issue not listed in today's agenda. Pursuant to Arizona Open Meeting Law, individual commission members may ask town staff to review a matter, ask that the matter be placed on future agenda or respond to criticism made by speakers. However, the commission may not discuss or take legal action on matters raised during call to audience. In order to speak during call to audience, please specify what you wish to discuss when completing your blue speaker card. But obviously, we don't have those today. So if you'd like to speak, please raise your hand.
Vice Chair, also for your knowledge, we did not receive any notices prior to the meeting for anybody wishing to speak either.
Okay, well, it doesn't seem like we have anybody who wishes to speak, so let's go ahead and move on to Council Liaison Comments.
Vice Chair Clark?
Yes.
Council Member Jones Ivy has asked me to attend the meeting and fill in for her. And I don't have any Council Liaison Comments, but I just wanted to let you know that I'm filling in for Council Member Jones Ivy in listening to the meeting. Thank you.
Very good. Thank you, Vice Mayor Barrett. So let's go ahead and move on to the study session agenda item number one, presentation and discussion regarding the Parks and Recreation Master Plan Project.
Thank you, Vice Chair Clark. So welcome, everyone. It's great to see you all. As we talked about last week for the study session today, Mike Svetz with PROS Consulting will be leading the discussion with a PowerPoint. It really is going to provide some background work in terms of the work that's already been done, the work that's currently being done, and then some next steps. Last month in our study session, we laid out a schedule of meetings that has been revised. It'll be included in the presentation. Primarily, what we've done is we have built in two more community meetings. We had one back in January, I believe, it was pre-COVID. Everything these days is pre-COVID and post-COVID, isn't it? Anyway, so while we received a lot of information, a lot of community engagement, we wanted to make sure just to kind of have an opportunity to circle back with our community. So we will have that scheduled in November, and that will be in advance of the additional opportunity to provide input specifically related to the conceptual site plans that you will be, will daylight to you all in November as well. And then we'll provide a full month of public comment opportunity. And then we'll come back with the last community meeting early in 2021. So there is a little bit of an adjustment, but again, it's in the spirit of ensuring that we're capturing as much community engagement, community data as possible. So with that, I will transition this over to Mike Svetz. But right before we do that, it does look, Matt, it looks like maybe Chair Temple had his hand raised. I know that he is on the phone. He was able to dial in. Chair Temple.
So he should now be able to unmute his audio.
No, I think he's dialed in on the phone.
Christy, just so you know, I've been monitoring it. Chair Temple has his own microphone and camera. He's been turning his camera on and off, but I don't think he's been able to figure out how to turn his volume on.
Okay. I will put myself on mute and give him a call to try to help him work through that. And at this point, Mike, take it away.
Thanks, Christy. Hopefully everybody can hear me well. Hey, Matt, one logistical issue. If you could give me the okay to share my screen, that'd be great.
I have your presentation already set up over here. Is it something?
If you want to share it, that's fine. That's great.
Okay.
No problem. So thanks so much, folks. Appreciate the opportunity to, again, meet with you all. One of the things that we, as Christy mentioned, we're kind of into phase two with regards to the project. And so as we kind of go through this, We're going to touch on, you know, just kind of where we were at with regards to the, how do I say this, where we were at with regards to the community needs phase, but recognize this is going to be very technical in nature with many spreadsheets, as well as some mapping. As Christy mentioned, we will review the next steps in a little bit more detail as we go through it. So next slide. So Matt, if you could go up to view in the top left there and go full screen mode. That's perfect. Thanks. So as I mentioned, we're going to talk about just revisit the prioritized needs. We are going to touch on a little bit more in-depth level of service, and it's not as simple and straightforward as it typically is in many agencies for us, but I'll speak to that. Equity mapping, and we are going to show you the town's mapping as it relates to your parks and amenities. We do not have HOA amenities mapped, but we will be able to show that for you as part of level of service. And then we're going to touch on the concept plan framework. That is a major component of this, and also what is going to kind of lead to the next step associated with some major community engagement. And then we'll talk about next steps. Next slide. Next slide. So these, just as a reminder, were your prioritized needs as defined by the holistic community needs phase. The recreation programs and service prioritized needs, as you would indicate, or as you remember, things in the high priority are typically things that the community finds needed and important, but also has a high level of unmet need. Things in the medium priority are a little less important, a little less needed, and maybe have a little less in terms of unmet need. And then things in the low priority, you can see a number of them are very age-specific and or skill-specific. Typically what this means is that there we have to be very, very strategic with regards to how and where we would expand these kind of amenities within your system. Next slide. Same thing with regards to the facility and amenity prioritized needs. One of the things that's important to recognize when we talk about programs and services and experiences, they always have to have a place. They have to have a location in order for those experiences to actually take place. So as you can see, the top three are very much tied to trails, whether they be soft surface, paved, or open space conservation areas with trails. Neighborhood parks is a big one, large community parks, as well as then restrooms. The facility amenity component in the medium priority starts to dive into a little bit more specificity of location, such as or type of experience, such as golf or dog parks, aquatics. And then you can see on the low priority, again, very age and or skill specific activities. Next slide. So this is where we start talking about level of service. This is a map that just shows a dot map location of where the town's parks are. One thing I do want to point out is the darker shaded orange areas on the actual map are your planned development areas. And typically with planned development areas, many of those locations are meant to be all inclusive. And so what that in turn kind of means is that as part of those planned development agreements, there's a lot of nuances that go into them, and everyone is usually a little bit different, but you can notice that typically there's a high level of contribution when it comes to parks and recreation amenities within those planned development areas. In many cases, those are called also in different terminology, some really high-end HOA communities or master plan communities. And so I want to point that out because you notice, especially up to the north, north of Tangerine, that there's really only one park that the town owns that manages and maintains it, and that's Honeybee Canyon. And the expectation is all of that other dark orange is park and recreation amenities are very much provided by the planned developments or the HOAs or master plan developments in those areas. Next slide. So one thing I think it's important to just kind of revisit very quickly is the fact that your current population is around 46,000 folks. And in the next 13 to 14 years, it's going to grow to somewhere in the neighborhood of around, I want to say 56 or 57,000 folks. And so when we look at this, when we start to consider a master plan, we're looking to project what your needs are in the future through a combination of trend analysis, demographics, as well as where you intend to grow. So what you're seeing in front of you is a current level of service associated with everything that's provided by your community. And so what this means is it's a combination of both. It's a combination of both what I would call Town of Oro Valley inventory and other inventory that is publicly accessible to your community. And so though some of this other inventory is not meant to be consumed by your entire community, it does provide a level of service to your community that in turn the town of Oro Valley does not need to do. So what this kind of gives you an indication of is based on park type or what we call park classification, how much acreage you have in your park and recreation system in the town. So one of the things that's important is to recognize that all of what we would kind of consider to be that's a developed park acreage, which is mini parks, neighborhood parks, community parks, regional parks, special use areas, you have a grand total of 14.6 acres per 1,000 folks. And that's a pretty high inventory. When we look at the amount of acreage that you have for every 1,000 folks. Below the line is below the total developed park acreage is what we call Greenbelt Trail Corridor areas, as well as conservation area trail parks. Though you do have a 0.13 acres per thousand and 3.3 acres per thousand, they're below the line simply because we do not create a recommended level of service for those two very specific type of park classifications. The reason is simply a matter of green belts and trail corridors are meant to carry trails. And we don't measure the number of acres or the linear miles of green belts or trails based on population. It is really about how do you use land to efficiently create a trail system without necessarily being holden to a specific standard. So it's a matter of how do you create a trail system that's effective and efficient without necessarily having it tied to what we would call a linear mile trail system. In terms of conservation areas and trail parks, same thing. We typically look at those as opportunities, and you're not necessarily in the business of trying to create a specific standard for that. If you were to kind of go back and consider the land use map on which the town map was created, you'll be able to identify that there are some areas that are designated for that specific purpose. Next slide. So this is what the town's contribution is to that overall level of service. So the overall level of service was 14.6 acres per thousand, and yours is 12.71. Your contribution is primarily in the community park, regional park, and recreation special use areas. You are not in the business based on how your town has developed and how development agreements have been struck. You're not in the business of developing mini parks and neighborhood parks. You have basically left that up to the development community to provide those type of parks to your community as a whole. But as you can see, you do make up 12.71 of the 14.6 acres per thousand folks. Next slide. The HOA breakdown is, again, it's the mini parks and the neighborhood parks. And you can see that there is about 0.85 acres per thousand of mini parks and 1.04 acres per 1,000 of neighborhood parks. Now, as you go forward, and you'll see when we kind of speak to this in the future, that we are not typically in the business of recommending more mini parks. Mini parks are exceptionally small in acres, typically no more than an acre in size, and they do have very little recreational value. And so one of the things that we look at when we see this current service level is simply to understand that you have almost the same amount of service level provided through mini parks as you do neighborhood parks. And ideally, your mini park acreage would be far less and your neighborhood park acreage would be far more, simply because neighborhood parks provide greater recreational value. Next slide. So this then starts to dive into the amenities. And so this is amenities and indoor facilities. So this is, in essence, all of that stuff that makes up your park system. So whether it's archery ranges, athletic fields, sport courts such as basketball courts, pickleball courts, tennis courts, volleyball courts, playgrounds, ramadas. We've broken ramadas out into two different types, one that's more reservable for medium to large groups, and then the smaller ramadas, which you can see is primarily housed within the HOA community. And then, of course, your indoor recreation center space at the community center. So this kind of gives you a sense of what your current service level is, based on your current population for all of the amenities in both town parks and HOA parks. Next slide. So this is then the current service level for amenities and indoor facilities specific to the town. And you can see that there are, you're our major provider associated with what we would kind of call the big stuff. So archery ranges, athletic fields, golf courses, dog parks, swimming facilities, large group ramadas, splash pads, and of course, community center space. Next slide. And then the HOAs are really kind of, they have far less amenities in them, but they are the amenities that typically fit in mini parks and or neighborhood parks. So such things as basketball courts, tennis courts, volleyball courts, playgrounds, those small group ramadas, and of course, the swimming pools that are kind of meant to just serve a neighborhood or an HOA or a master plan community, but are not necessarily publicly accessible. That is a lot of swimming pools in your HOA communities, 23 of them. So you basically have one swimming pool, and this doesn't count the swimming pools in the backyard. This doesn't count your swimming pool, your aquatic center, or the pool at the community center. This is just those individual neighborhood HOA swimming pools, and you have one of those for almost less than just about 2,000 people. which is a lot of swimming pools in your community as a whole. Next slide. So this is where we're going to start to talk about recommended level of service. And so you can see that this kind of breaks down very similarly, but what you see is your current park inventory, and then you see your current service levels. And then the recommended developed park service levels for 15 years from now, in 2035. What we're really focused on here is to recognize that we do not think that for a number of reasons that you should be in the business of developing new parks. You have 12.71 acres of, you know, of parkland for every 1,000 folks. The typical, we typically don't go much above 10 acres per thousand, which is kind of where we've landed with regards to the recommended level of service. This is in many cases part and parcel driven by the fact that you have Naranja Park as well as Steam Pump Ranch that are in dire need of further development and have been in dire need of further development. And the focus then is not about acquiring and developing new parkland, but it's going to be focused on developing and redeveloping your existing parkland. As I mentioned before, we aren't creating a recommended level of service for Greenbelt Trail corridors and or conservation area trail parks. Next slide. So when we look at the recommended level of service for your HOA parks, it's going to be really focused on neighborhood parks. So we do not want you to be in the business of, quite honestly, allowing the development community to develop mini parks in the future. We want you to develop more neighborhood parks. And that need over the next 15 years is 21 acres. So what this means in terms of the number of parks, a typical neighborhood park is maybe no less than 3 acres, but can be up to 15 acres. And so we're kind of talking about the development community developing maybe somewhere in the neighborhood of 2 to 5, maybe upwards of 7 neighborhood parks to kind of round out where you need to be in the next 10 to 15 years. Next slide. This then starts to understand, though we are not necessarily recommending new park acreage, we are recommending the addition of amenities within your park system. And in particular, this can be at Naranja Park. This could be a combination of doing something at James Craig. This can be something at redeveloping potentially Riverfront Park. But you can see that the focus is really going to be on baseball softball diamonds, just 2 of them, 1 additional basketball court, 1 additional dog park, 2 multi-purpose fields, 8 pickleball courts, 1 really good playground, 3 additional group ramadas, and then 1 splash pad. We aren't necessarily recommending a whole bunch of additional indoor recreation center space. And so 4,000 square feet is potentially redeveloping some space at Steam Pump Ranch that can be used for indoor recreation center space. Or if you were to do something at Rancho Vistoso. Next slide. So when we look at the recommended levels of service for the amenities that would go into HOA parks, we're really focused on just basketball courts, playgrounds, and small group ramadas. This does not mean that they can't put in pickleball courts. This does not mean that they can't put in tennis courts. This does not mean that they can't put in another swimming pool. But based on your current level of service for many of those amenities, you're doing the town as a whole is doing a really good job at providing that level of service. And again, it's really about trying to right size the system and not necessarily have the HOAs put themselves in a position of overdeveloping their infrastructure, which I have seen, unfortunately, too many times down the road, that becomes very difficult for the HOA in and of themselves to do long-term maintenance and or replace those amenities in the future, just simply because they can be exceptionally costly going forward. Next slide. So this then turns around and takes a look at what we call equity mapping. So again, this is the town park map, just to kind of give you, again, an understanding of where your parks are. So what you're going to see is you are going to see your parks and your amenities that were shown in the spreadsheets previously. You're going to see circles around those parks. And those circles indicate how much of your population you are serving with each park and or each amenity. Those circles are going to vary in size. And the size of those circles are driven by two factors on the park side. One, the first factor is the size of the park. So if the park is large in size, it is typically going to have a larger circle around it. If the park is smaller in size, it will have a smaller circle around it. The other factor is population density. So if you have a dense population around a specific park or a specific amenity, you will in turn typically see that circle start to get a little bit smaller. If you don't have a lot of population around any specific location, then that circle has a tendency to get bigger. Those two factors work hand in hand in creating the service area. When I get to amenities, I'll explain how the amenities work a little bit differently than how park acreage works. So the first slide that I wanted to show you is, next slide, Matt, is community parks. So you have two community parks. You know what they are, Riverfront and James Craig. And you can see that there is overlap between those two community parks, but you are in many cases covering almost all of your community that is not in master plan developed areas. So you do have some pretty good coverage with regards to community parks. Again, a reason as to why we're not recommending new additional community parks to be developed. Next slide. Regional park, Naranja. You can see that it basically almost covers the entire community. Again, another reason why we're not recommending new regional parks as opposed to recommending the development of Naranja going forward. Next slide. When we look at special use parks, these can be golf courses. These can be steam pump ranch and so on and so forth. So again, from a special use park perspective, you have really good coverage, primarily serving the parts of your community that aren't in dark orange. Next slide. And conservation trail parks, I just wanted to put this map up there. We don't create a service area for this simply because of the fact we don't create a level of service for it, but you do have good distribution of your conservation trail parks. You have Honeybee, and then you basically have parks north, west, south, and east that do a really good job. And this doesn't count all of the state-owned land off to the east and north of your community. So you do have good distribution of your conservation and, you know, trail parks. Next slide. So golf courses, again, you have good distribution. You're covering pretty much almost the entire community, as well as parts to the west and the south. We recognize that golf courses are very specific and have a very specific use, aren't necessarily just meant to serve Oro Valley, but your golf courses do a good job of serving your residents going forward. Next slide. When we look at diamond fields lighted, so this is baseball fields, softball fields, you can see that you do have good service area coverage to the south and the center of your community, but you also can see a lot of yellow that is not serviced simply because of the lack of the number of fields that you have. So again, you can kind of see that you have a smaller circle associated with Riverfront and a larger circle associated with James Craig. This is simply because you have more fields at James Craig than you do Riverfront. And you also have denser population surrounding Riverfront as well. Next slide. Multi-purpose fields, lighted. Again, you actually have really good coverage here, specifically because of Naranja Park. But you do have some areas to the south that are not covered at all, where you do have population and will have growth going forward. Next slide. Dog parks, again, pretty good coverage as well. A little bit light for some of those areas to the north. And why I say some of the areas to the north is simply because of the fact that typically HOA parks, and we're not recommending it, but typically HOA parks do not provide coverage or do not provide dog parks as part of their neighborhood parks. So you do have some coverage that needs to be taken care of to the west and to the north, which is why we're recommending an additional dog park going forward. Next slide. Outdoor basketball courts. You only have two, and this is okay because you have so many outdoor basketball courts associated with your mini and neighborhood parks associated with your HOA and or master plan communities. We are going to recommend, I think, one additional basketball court, potentially as part of Naranja's development or potentially at Riverfront as well. But again, you as a community as a whole are not light on outdoor basketball courts. And so our focus, though you as a town don't have great coverage, collectively between the town and the HOAs, you have outdoor basketball courts throughout the community. Next slide. Same thing goes with volleyball courts. Same exact story as associated with basketball courts. A little better coverage with your outdoor volleyball courts, but again, not a major focus for you going forward. Simply because the HOA community does a good job of helping and complementing volleyball courts, outdoor volleyball courts in the town. Next slide. Reservable ramadas. And this is something that is just for you to take care of. As we mentioned earlier, we broke ramadas out into two different classifications. One being these large, medium to large group ramadas that can and should be reserved for use. Not to say that somebody can't use it if it's not reserved, but these are typically in high demand. And you do have some pretty good coverage throughout your community. Again, we are recommending, I believe, three additional ramadas, and not quite sure exactly where those will land, but those three additional ramadas will do a good job of trying to cover a lot of that yellowish area that you see is currently not served by reservable ramadas. Next slide. Pickleball courts. You have a strong pickleball court at both the community center, and I believe we probably need to put the ones there on it at Push as well. But again, I think those circles are very much going to overlap. Pickleball, as you know, is a growing sport. As you also know, your population is definitely leans 55 and older and will continue to lean 55 and older. Even if your population does start to get a little bit younger, you're still going to be in that neighborhood of having a population of 55 and older making up about 50% of your population. And though pickleball is being introduced to kids, whether it be through families or whether it be through non-COVID school days, it is still trending to be a sport that is and an activity that is primarily in an older population. So we are recommending additional pickleball courts. Your HOA your HOAs may add these in the future at neighborhood parks, but currently you're the only provider of publicly accessible pickleball courts. I wouldn't say that five times fast, but long story short, we feel like you're in the pickleball business and should be in the pickleball business going forward. Next slide. Playgrounds. Again, you only have three. But this is, again, very similar to your outdoor basketball courts and volleyball courts, where you have a number, I believe, 29 playgrounds provided by HOAs. So your playgrounds need to be dynamic. They need to be large. They need to be unique. They need to provide features that aren't typically found in neighborhood parks. The one that you're currently, you know, that's new or currently being developed, and Ron has a really good example of the type of playgrounds that you should be looking to provide. They're meant to draw to a community as a whole and not necessarily just be that standard static modular playground that has a couple of slides to it, some walking ramps, some climbing features. Yours need to be unique to the rest of what's offered in your HOA communities. Next slide. Archery range. So we broke this up into two. You have a fixed archery range at Naranja, which again, you do a great job of coverage, pretty much the entire community and then some. And next slide. You then also have a walking archery range at Naranja as well. Again, very centrally located, but we're not going to recommend additional archery ranges. Doesn't mean you can't, you know, add or expand to what you have currently on site, but the development of, say, a new archery range somewhere in your park system is not recommended at this time. Next slide. And then tennis courts. Again, you have a number of them and you do a pretty good job of servicing the community. We would recommend a couple of more. But again, tennis courts is something that is also strongly supplemented by your HOAs as well. And it is a sport that has a tendency to lean towards two demographics. It does have a tendency to lean young and also does have a, tendency to lean old, older populations. But it also is a tendency for whatever reason that leans to wealthier populations as well. So you do have some really good coverage, but additional tennis courts is something that you're in the business of. Again, your HOAs do have some tennis courts as well. So though we may be recommending a few more, we're not necessarily recommending, you know, 8 to 12 additional tennis courts in your system simply because you have good coverage, good complementary coverage, you know, between your HOAs as well as what you provide as a town. Next slide. Outdoor swimming facilities, you have two. Again, we're not necessarily going to recommend a new pool. Pools are meant, as you know, they're meant to be renovated and try to keep up with the times. There is opportunity to potentially do things. I don't want to say necessarily differently, but when you start talking about rec amenities for open swim, those are features that, you know, potentially 10, 15, 20 years down the road, you'll look to potentially introduce new features beyond what is currently at the Aquatic Center. These are really going to be less about adding amenities, though, and making sure that you have the financial sustainability to manage and maintain them going forward. Next slide. And splash pads, you have one associated with the Aquatic Center. It's not completely publicly accessible simply because you have to go through the Aquatic Center to access it. And so typically in most systems, splash pads are those things that are water playgrounds. In other words, you're not paying an entrance fee or something along those lines to use them. This is something that's more a management and operational issue as opposed to it being a capital investment. But I think we are going to recommend maybe one additional splash pad to help do a good job of covering those areas that are shown in, the yellow areas in the residential land use areas of your community. Next slide. And indoor rec facilities. Again, I think we mentioned we were looking at an additional 4,000 square feet that can possibly be at developed space at Steam Pump Ranch. But again, your community center, though it is definitely in need of updating and a plan that makes better use of its space in terms of pure square footage, it has the opportunity to do a great job of serving your community as a whole. So we're not necessarily looking at saying a major expansion to your community center or developing a new facility anywhere in the community over the next 10 to 15 years. Next slide. So we then kind of took all of this information, so needs, level of service, the park and facility assessments, and are looking to develop concept plans, as you know, for some of your parks. So what we're going to show you is these are the parks that and or locations that we're going to develop concept plans. Not just the community center itself, but we are obviously looking at how do we do something at the community center site. So, for example, at the community center site, we know that parking is an issue. We don't know that you can necessarily add parking, but a potential outcome of a concept plan at the community center, for example, is really about can you reconfigure parking to make the most of what you have there and park more cars there? So these are the parks that we're going to develop concept plans for. What I want to run through with you is just kind of an aerial and then what I would call a bullet pointed framework of what we're going to do with those specific concept plans. Okay, next slide. So this is the community center site. You've got the pool, you've got the tennis courts, the golf course, the parking lot, the community center, the pickleball courts, and support amenities for those. This is just the aerial. So the framework for the community center concept plan is going to be focused on, next slide, replacing tennis courts and irrigation, reconfiguring parking lot to increase number of spaces, and replacing and upgrading the pool deck and the pump room equipment. So this is for the outdoor space. The indoor space will have its own concept plan that Clint Breckenridge is working on and is going to build upon the work that he has done previously. So though there is not necessarily a bullet point for the indoor space associated with the actual community center, there will be a separate concept plan for that as well. Next slide. Riverfront Park. Again, this is primarily, this is a great park. It does need some love, and it does have some opportunity to potentially use the land in a little bit different way. But you have multi-purpose fields, you have diamond fields, you have, you know, playground Ramada, basketball court, tennis court, and then, of course, parking. So the framework for developing a new concept plan for Riverfront Park is, next slide. So this is a combination of what I would call life cycle replacement, as well as then how do we potentially do something different? And so replacing fencing, resurfacing basketball courts, tennis courts, upgrading the playground, improving irrigation, repair roofs. There's nothing really fun about some of this. We also then have to look at upgrading the amphitheater and taking care of athletic field lighting. But we're also then looking at do we have the opportunity to add a splash pad here and add a dog park here? Do we have an opportunity to convert rectangular fields to diamond fields? And by doing so, what we in turn would do is kind of look at focusing this as a diamond field athletic park, or a park that just has diamond fields. Looking at converting that standalone tennis court to a basketball court. There's much more use of your tennis courts at the community center and at Push than there is here, simply because it's just one tennis court. But that basketball court is heavily used, and you probably would stand to even have greater usage if you had a second court. And then, of course, updating the restroom and the concession stand. Next slide. This is, Aquatic Center and James Craig. You can see that there are a number of diamond fields here. You potentially do get into probably using some of the outfield space for multi-purpose fields, but primarily, it's a diamond field location, and it has a lot of potential for this park. We spent a lot of time talking about this, and is there opportunities to connect the two parking lots so that they get better used, that you have better connectivity, through the park, and so on and so forth. So the framework for this park is replacing the playground, and this is critical. It is well beyond its useful life. It's a safety hazard. It's not inviting. It's not fun anymore. So that is a critical component to a new concept plan. As I mentioned, better connectivity between the parking lots and parking areas. Potentially to add a new, what we would call adventure play area, that is more what we would kind of a nature playground as opposed to a modular, and potentially relocating the dog park, demolishing the racquetball courts and potentially converting it to basketball courts, upgrading the memorial garden area and repairing irrigation, providing a new pump room at the aquatic center. And then, as I mentioned, the aesthetics of the pool area, it's hard. I mean, I think anybody that's pulled into that park by the pool, you don't necessarily, that pool shines once you get into it. But as you drive up to it, because it's elevated, there's nothing that really on the outside that has any sort of curb appeal that matches the indoor area. Next slide. Naranja Park. This is obviously the one that provides you the most potential. And we think from a regional park perspective, which is what Naranja is, it has to have multiple experiences associated with it. And so the concept plan is going to be very different than the one that was previously developed and put out to the voters. So the framework for Naranja as of right now is, next slide, Stabilizing the erosion areas. This is exceptionally critical because it poses major safety concerns for people using the edges of this park. And in some cases in the what we would kind of consider to be the heart of the park as well. Consider adding a BMX and or a skate park. You don't provide that to your community right now. And typically there is at least one of these features in a community for every 50,000 folks, even if it tends to be a little bit older. Adding additional rectangular fields, restrooms, sport courts, the parking to support those amenities, walking paths, wayfinding in a 213-acre park is going to be critical. So that people know which direction they're going and where to get into the park, where to get out of the park at, if they do walk and or bike to it. And then, of course, trails. This is very boring, but providing a better delineation of the maintenance area so that we don't have the public necessarily entering that area and creating a safety or liability issue. Increasing buffers between the park and some of the adjacent homes, and then strengthening connections to Copper Creek, both the neighborhood and the elementary school. Next slide. And then Steam Pump Ranch. Next slide. So these are the framework, and of course we have to work within the historical designation to upgrade this location, but updating the buildings that are within the historical core is exceptionally critical. We don't want to lose those buildings simply to, I don't want to say neglect, but over time I think anybody recognizes that a building that isn't maintained eventually becomes blighted, and you sometimes have to do the only last resort is to get rid of it. And we certainly don't want to do that as part of the historical designation that this location has. Providing an upgraded performance area that's better organized for seating, obviously upgrading electrical and plumbing, relocating the farmers market to the panhandle portion of the site, and then replacing existing farmers market structures that don't fall within the historic designation. So this is the framework for Steam Pump Ranch. There's only so much that we can potentially do with this site, but it is certainly has wonderful opportunities for a community that desires special events. And not all special events have to be the size of a 4th of July in a non-COVID year. Your farmers markets are special events. Music performances are special events. Such things as food truck nights or food festivals are special events. They're not necessarily the come one, come all entire community, but this site does have tremendous opportunity to do that, as well as provide a level of programming that's currently not being done within the community right now. Next slide. So our next steps, as Christy said, and I think this has been updated over time, some of this is the major bullet points associated with it. So we're currently working through a program assessment and operational funding analysis. We're, as you know, we're going to do the concept plans here. We are doing a connectivity analysis, and this kind of speaks to the whole component of not necessarily developing trails to a specific number, but understanding where your priorities are in terms of developing and or connecting your trail system so that it just feels more connected. The worst thing that you ever want to have a trail is that it feels like it's a trail to nowhere. and so that's the whole point of the connectivity analysis scope item. Capital improvement plan, and this is where the rubber starts to meet the road in terms of what does it cost to implement the improvements, whether it be associated with the concept plans, the connectivity analysis, or other upgrades that are necessary in your system. And of course, if we're going to develop a capital improvement plan, we need to have the funding and revenue strategies that come with it. We are not in the business of creating an aspirational plan. You've heard me say this. We're in the business of creating implementable and realistic plans. And so one of the things associated with the concept plans is to understand what it's going to cost to implement them. And then we need to make sure that you have the financial capacity to do so. Because showing concept plans in a master plan, showing a capital improvement plan in a master plan that you can't afford, all it creates is apathy and disappointment. And we don't want to do that in this plan. We want something that 10 to 15 years from now, you can look back on and say that you checked the majority, if not all of the boxes that we're recommending. And then, of course, the strategic action plan is how do we prioritize all of the little detail that needs to go into implementing a master plan. And then, of course, you just have that final master plan document. Next slide. So this is when we're going to be in front of you, when we're going to be in front of the community, and when we're going to be in front of town council over the next, basically between now and April. So November 12th, though we have done this meeting specifically for you as a Parks and Rec Advisory Board, we will be doing it for the community as a whole on November 12th. We in turn are going to also then come back to you in about a month and bring the draft concept plans that we just outlined the framework for. After we've presented those draft concept plans for you, we are going to post the draft concept plans on the town's website webpage for discussion by the community. This will give the community an opportunity to basically provide their questions, concerns, comments, suggestions on each of these plans. We then in turn will take these, all of that input, and basically look to update the concept plans based on your feedback on November 17th, based on the community's feedback in November and December, and present those to you on January 19th. We are then going to present to town council on January 20th, a version of this presentation, but also add in the connectivity analysis, the concept plans, and the capital improvement plan. At your PRAB meeting in January, we are going to do the connectivity analysis and CIP as well. Then we will come back to you February and do a program assessment, partnership assessment, all of that operational stuff that I mentioned that we're currently working on. We will do a virtual community meeting in February that speaks to the connectivity analysis, concept plans, and CIP to get any last potential feedback from the community prior to landing the plane on the draft master plan. And then the last three are really just about bringing to you an entire plan, recommendation for adoption at town council, and then adoption of the master plan. So as Christy mentioned, you know, I think where you all were maybe a month ago is us kind of landing the plane on this in March. There was some feedback provided by town administration, town council, mayor, to give the community as much time as possible to provide input on the concept plans, especially since we're doing it as we're getting into the holiday season. And so we felt like we didn't want to rush that component. And so by extending that to about a month, you know, about 30 days or so, it kind of had a tendency to push the plan out in terms of when we expect to complete it. Next slide. So questions, concerns, comments, suggestions. I recognize that's a lot of information to digest. Hopefully I did so in a way that it made sense.
I guess Member Coyle has his hand raised. Yeah.
Chair Temple, do we have you back and with audio?
You are muted.
You can unmute yourself there.
Oh, back to muted.
Here, let's try that again, Chair Temple. Okay, you should be good to go now.
Okay.
Great.
Ah, there we go.
At last. This is my question, correct? Or are we going into the question?
Do you have your script in front of you?
Yes, I do.
Okay. So right now, if you wanted to open the floor to public comment, I think this would be the best time to do that. If there are no members of the public who'd like to speak, you and the board may then do so at that time.
Okay. You've already gone through, I would assume, Matt, the process as far as raising your hand?
Yeah.
Okay. Okay. Next thing I have is really call to audience. Am I out of sequence here?
Yes. So right now where we would be is if you want to open the floor to public comment, this would be the time to do so on this item.
Okay. As Matt aptly put it, I'm sorry for the confusion on my end, but we are opening this up for public comment at this particular time. If you can raise your hand via the system, we'll address them in the order received.
I think Member Coyle had a question.
Yeah, I was waiting for the audience if there was anybody there. And Matt, a question. How do I toggle my hand on my screen? Where is that button?
If you select your name, it should give you some options, which you would raise your hand at that point in time.
Got it.
It should give you that option. Chair Temple, I do not see any members of the public at this time who would like to say anything. So if you would like to close the public comment period, you could certainly do that and then go ahead and discuss it as chair and board.
Okay. As Matt suggested, we'll close it for the public comment at this particular time and open it up to my fellow board members to raise any questions and or comments. Okay.
So, this is Matt Wood. I can't figure out how to raise my hand.
Yeah,
I think and I lost the video here.
Okay. If you all as members would like to just state when you'd like to speak, if you go ahead and recognize them, Chair Temple, I think that would be sufficient.
Okay, well, Member Wood raised his hand a little quicker then.
Thank you. Yeah, that's a great presentation. I live north of Tangerine in the Rancho Vistoso area where there's not a lot of parks. And in your map, you're showing the golf club at Vistoso, which is sort of a hot topic since it no longer exists, actually. And the owner of it is trying to develop it. So I'd take that off before I went to public comment. It's an area that, I mean, I live right on it. So, I mean, you know, full disclosure. So we're hoping that it would be an open space or preserve of some sort. And that's kind of what's going on here. I don't know if you knew all of that, but you might want to get a little background on that as you proceed on this. The Conservancy Fund was trying to buy it from the owner, and the owner said that wasn't enough money, and now it's going back to square one again. So I just wanted to put that out there so you'd know what was going on. In case you didn't,
we are aware of that, and I'll make sure if it is on the map that it's removed. I don't believe it is, but we'll double check. I believe that the park that we're showing north of Tangerine is actually Honeybee.
No, but on your map itself, it shows the Stone Canyon Club and it shows the golf club at Vistoso, and it shows the views.
Okay. We'll clean that up. Yes. Because it doesn't exist. Understood. Thank you.
Okay.
Matt?
Yes.
Matt, I lost video. I can still have audio. Is there something you can do to help me, or just I can ask a couple questions just on the audio?
We can see you, and we can hear you. So I think that you're good. You're okay. Good on that end.
I know everyone's face. Mike, two sets of questions. Sure. Just to clarify your presentation, am I correct in my understanding that neighborhood parks are the same as HOA parks?
Well, in your community, yes.
Okay.
You are not a provider as a town of neighborhood parks.
Okay, that answers the second part of it, because the amenities that you showed for the HOA parks are then the ones that would be typically in a neighborhood park.
Yes, they're either in the mini parks or the neighborhood park. Primarily, I believe, your neighborhood parks.
And are neighborhood parks generally open to all residents, or kind of restricted to the neighborhood?
Well, it depends, right? And so I think typically most neighborhood parks, whether they be, if they were a part of your system or not, would have a tendency to be used by the folks that live within a mile of them. And so the idea behind a neighborhood park is simply the fact that it's meant to service, you know, a small service area, so to speak. So a mile to maybe 2 miles. And because of the number that you have in town, as well as the acreage, we're not necessarily recommending that you jump into that business. Correct.
And if I may, my second questions, the concept plan for the various parks as you presented at this time, do you have an implementation timeline, just a rough order? Is that like a 2-year concept, or is that a 10-year concept plan?
You know, I think it, I would say, you know, I don't want to put a year to it, correct?
Okay.
So I think that you will have an opportunity. There's a couple of ways to look at those concept plans. There's a bucket for a lot of your existing parks that is simply going to be about life cycle replacement.
Right.
And so those are things that, depending upon where those assets are in their life cycle, it could be that, you know what, it's critical and you need to do it right now, like the playground by the aquatic center, or it might be something that you need to plan to do 7 to 10 years from now. So when we're thinking about just life cycle replacement, it could be tomorrow to 10 years. The implementation of, shall we say, what we would call reconfiguring parks or adding amenities, we are going to be in a position as we go forward to develop what we would call a prioritized strategic plan for those. It just depends on, for example, if you relocate, if you get rid of the two multi-purpose fields at Riverfront, that's a lot more work than upgrading, for example, the amphitheater at Riverfront Park.
Right.
And so it's about understanding what each of those improvements would be, landing the plane on them, and then starting to prioritize from there.
Okay.
So, yeah, I can't give you much more of a more specific answer at this time.
That's understandable. The second part of my question is much more unfair. for the capital improvement, which you noted, do you have a rough order of magnitude of cost on that?
No, I do not. Not at this time.
That's it. Thank you, Chair.
But we will, I think it, just to revisit that very quickly, we are going to create a capital improvement plan that's kind of in 2 to 3 buckets for you. The first bucket is that life cycle replacement. So what are the things in your system over the next 10 years that just need to be life cycled in place? Then we're going to have this bucket that kind of deals with Craig and deals with Riverfront and deals with steam pump, that are really about how do we upgrade those parks without necessarily building a whole lot new to them. We're not expanding them. Naranja is going to be the third bucket that is a much bigger project that will likely have to be done in phases as you're currently improving that park. But that's going to be a bigger bucket. It's much more visionary in nature and certainly, obviously, will cost more money. So I think it's important to recognize that we are going to break your capital improvement plan up into those three buckets, part and parcel because there's also different funding strategies for dealing with each of those buckets as well.
Thank you. I particularly thank you for where you pointed out the safety issues. I appreciate that.
You're welcome. I saw you nodding your head. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair.
Phil, is that your hand raised? I have the one screen.
May I, Chair Temple? This is Charles.
Yeah, please do.
Okay. Mike, thank you so much for your clear presentation. And it was very comprehensive, easy to follow. I have a comment just for thinking, food for thought, and I understand the complexity. So in the town of Oro Valley, we have two baseball little leagues, CDO, which covers the south part of the town, and Oro Valley Little League, which covers the kids from the north part of the town. And depending on the season, they may have from 300 to 500 kids in that little league. As a matter of fact, the Oro Valley Little League was the team who represented the town in the state tournament and won the state championship. And ironically, this little league, they practice in Catalina Town, because there is no fields available for them in our town. So our Oro Valley Little League does not practice in Oro Valley because there are not fields. So when you are thinking on that, maybe just, I understand the town should not adapt to the little leagues available in the town because they may disappear over time. They should adapt to the town, but just for consideration, for the kids who live in the north part of the town, there is no diamond or baseball fields available for them. And the second comment was about a splash pad. I like the way you mentioned our only splash pad in town. It is not public. It's not for public access. It's not for free. So whenever you're going to present to the public, I would encourage you to be as clear as you were tonight, saying, yes, we do have a splash pad, but it is not for public access. It's not for free. So it'll be like half splash pad available. That sense. That's all. Thank you.
To just address your first. Okay. Thank you.
Bill, did you have a question? Member Saleta, can you hear me?
Yes, I do.
Okay.
Thank you, Chair. Mike, first of all, again, like others have said, great presentation. I really do appreciate it, and I'm sure the other members of the board also. Just a question regarding your, you listed a few things as critical. Could you just touch upon your criteria for that? As you saw the different things there in terms of rating them as critical. And then the follow-up to that is, are those things going to rise to the top in terms of capital improvement plan?
Yes. So when we, in the needs assessment, I believe we touched on a little bit regarding the criteria, but things that are critical are things that should have been taken care of yesterday. And what we typically are looking at when things are critical is that they're posing a safety and or risk issue to your community members that are using those amenities. And or, for example, I don't know that we've labeled it as critical at Naranja, but having a clear delineation between a maintenance yard and what's and the publicly accessible areas of that park needs to be critical, because you just do not want anybody having access to a maintenance yard, safety issues, theft issues, and so on and so forth. So basically critical is safety issues, life safety issues, code issues that absolutely positively need to be taken care of. And when we talk about priority, absolutely, those are the things that will absolutely rise to the top. And we're going to recommend that those issues be taken care of in year one coming out of this plan.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Matt, I have a quick question if I can interject at this point in time.
Yes, absolutely. You're the chair.
Mike, again, I'll add my sincerest thank you for the very professional presentation. It answered a lot of my questions during the course of that. But I had one relative to the amphitheater in Riverfront, as well as the open air performance venue at Steam Pump. I'm trying to understand the synergies that you see between the two of them, and how does that work into a brick and mortar plan, if you will, for both of them?
Yeah, I think one of the synergies is that, number one, your community is rating, I think, special events as like their number one thing that they need, find important, and want more of.
I found that out when we had the on-site
solicitation
of interviews. That was number one.
Yes. And so I think that the way to look at Steam Pump Ranch, because of its locate, well, not because of its location, but because of its restrictions, you're only going to be able to do so much with it being an event location there. Not to say that it shouldn't be, it's just going to be geared towards events that fit that site, that have the parking associated with it, restrooms associated with it, the support facilities. You then will have an opportunity at Riverfront to have, you know, a different kind of special event. You'll have a different kind of venue. You'll have more parking, more restrooms associated with it. And then, you know, eventually, if you're thinking about potentially really large community events, the come one, come all, that's what where potentially Naranja will come into play, because it has the space, it'll have the support amenities. So if I had to just be simple about it, Steam Pump Ranch is going to be really about small special events. The amphitheater at Riverfront's probably going to be small to medium. And then Naranja is probably going to be your location where you potentially could do a 4th of July or larger community events that are going to have people coming and go either for, you know, a block of time like a 4th of July, or you could have events that are day long or weekend long that people are coming and going. And so that's kind of how I would characterize that. Some of what we're going to work through, to your point, I think is very well taken, is as we work through the concept plans, part of why we did it the way we did it was to look at what the community's needs were. But we're also doing the separate program assessment as well that says, when we start to say, okay, what are we doing with community events now and where are we doing them? The next step is then to say, okay, if we do these three levels of improvement, what kind of events are most associated with Steam Pump? What type of events are most associated with Riverfront? What type of events are most associated with Naranja? So that when we start to talk about events, we just don't say, expand, you know, because the community wants to expand them. It's about right-sizing those events based on the amenities that ultimately will be available to the community at each one of those locations.
Great. Thank you, Mike.
You're welcome.
Are there any other questions from my fellow board members? Okay, Matt, what is next? The call to audience, or?
We've already done the public comment regarding this item. So the last section here would be, if there's no further comments, you'd be looking at doing adjournment.
Matt, this is Joe Andrews, and I would like to make one comment. Vice Chair Clark, thank you for your impromptu step in. You did a wonderful job.
Oh, thank you very much.
I agree.
Thank you, Ann.
No problem.
Okay, well then, if there's no further business, I have a motion to adjourn. May I have a second?
Second.
Thank you, Ann. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
Okay, I think we have it. Again, thank you for your patience. I was a little slow on the trigger getting this thing up and running, but I finally got to it. And again, Mike, thank you for your very excellent presentation.
You're very welcome. Thank you so much. We'll see you guys in November.
Thank you. Take care.
Thank you. Bye. Thank you.